Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
The post-election analysis among the terminally online left has been a mess. There's apparently a desire to explain why Biden won and then elaborate on what that means for the future. But the conclusion isn't hard, and we've been saying it for months. Capital chose Biden, and capital won the election, and the future will be pro-capital. It's nothing more complicated than that. On this episode, we tackle the bad takes.
It seems like with this election, everybody was expecting Trump to be blown out of the water. And there's a lot of this Monday morning quarterbacking or armchair quarterbacking or just reading the tea leaves of why Trump almost won again. And instead of them just deciding or determining that it's because half the nation is, you know, racist and or devout to the Republican Party, they want to blame it on some other weird things, like this idea that there are two factions only within capital and that they're fighting one another, and this being the financial capital versus sort of industrial capital. So the idea that the banks are trying to fight against the manufacturers. But in the end, it's the same group of people. There's no difference between the two. The premise and the weird shit takes that you see on Reddit and Twitter is that financial capital backed Biden and industrial capital backed Trump. But in the end, that's not how it works, because industrial and financial are intertwined. They are part of the same group of people. Industry needs finance. Finance needs industry. There is no back and forth. What maybe there is was new capital versus old capital and what their alliances are and who can gain more power by voting one side or the other, purely for their own gains, not because there's some weird industrial alignment.
Yeah, I don't buy the alignment of capital. Capital thrives when all capital succeeds. It doesn't really make sense for one side to advocate for the destruction of another when they're all interdependent on each other. When one part of capital wins, the other part of capital wins, and so everybody wins together. It just, from a game theory perspective, doesn't make sense for one side to cannibalize the other and potentially harm themselves in doing so. And you saw this a little bit with the bailouts in 2008, where you had some of the banks. And if you want to look at it from the, you know, this was a financial capital angle, the banks were all so intertwined that the entire economy collapsed. Supposing there were factions, I think capital learned their lesson from 2008 and how interdependent everything was, and they have no incentive to infight with each other.
As you take a step back and just sort of define some of these terms, you know, what we're talking about is this idea that there are people with lots of money, that's the capitalists, who, because they have the influence with money, they can pick a horse that's in the race. In this case, it's the national presidential election. And from there, they align to one side or the other, and they fight, right? They're going to use their money to try to make one party win or lose. And what people are seeing, or at least attempting to see, is that financial capital, which is the banks, the investment firms, you know, all the people that are dealing with money on Wall Street, are at odds with the industrialists manufacturing goods, who for some reason are picking the GOP. And to me, it makes little to no sense.
And it doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. So looking at it from the bailout angle again, you have the coronavirus bailout, the PPP, which largely bailed out financial capital, but it also had service industry, it had some manufacturing stuff. Like it wasn't directed at one specific sector of capital. It was intended to prop up the entire system because we want the line to go up regardless of how many people are dying. And you have the GOP and the Dems largely supported the bailout in its entirety. And if you want to look at it from that angle, it largely was a banking related handout where the banks became flush with loan guarantees from the Federal Reserve. So basically the banks were encouraged to loan as much money as possible to literally anybody that wanted it. And that includes industrial capital. So like it just fundamentally did not and does not occur. All of capital is completely intertwined, and they wanted Biden this time, and they got Biden.
Yeah, what makes more sense to me is that Biden is the more stable capitalist or neoliberal than Trump. If you look at the one and only policy that Trump got right for the capitalists, that was the Trump tax cut, which largely was a handout and tax benefits to the wealthy and the capitalists already. After that, every other policy that Trump has had or created in his 4 years was almost harmful to the market. It was destabilizing. Now, some people may argue that destabilization is good because it gets rid of dead weight, yada, yada, yada. But if you're an investor and you're not a vulture investor, if you're just an investor playing the market and want to see the line go up, you don't want the instability. If you're a banker, you don't want the instability of being leveraged too far and people losing jobs and then losing their house, and you got to deal with, you know, the housing crisis or vehicles being behind other payments, right? You want steady increase in jobs, steady economy, so that in the end of the day, you can extract the interest rate and the principal from the people that you're lending to and make money out. You don't want the chaos that Trump was creating. And Biden's going to come in. He showed it, you know, his hand with Obama, which is a steady capitalist. He showed it during his time in the Senate and the House, right? He's a steady neoliberal capitalist. He will keep the market stable, and that's basically what they want.
Yeah, so the entire premise of the U.S. economic system is that inflation absolves capitalist ventures of past mistakes. So as money becomes kind of worth more going forward, it allows you to cover up bad debt. And it's desirable for interest rates to be high and have inflation so that those poor decisions of the past can be absolved. So now we're seeing interest rates sort of at historically low. The Fed interest rate is at zero. It's going to be tougher for capital of all shapes and sizes to overcome some of the bad debt. And this particularly hit the industrial companies. You have your oil companies, your energy companies, your manufacturing companies. They are struggling right now. So this idea that somehow industrial capital benefited from COVID is bananas. Like, I don't think there's any reason why they would want to support the existing kind of public policy that led to, you know, their economic hardship right now. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, this is the, you know, we can beat this dead horse all day. What it comes down to is that at the end of the day, the capitalist chose Biden because he was a smooth sailing, you know, neoliberal. Again, we'll keep using those terms because they just want the line to go up. They want inflation to go up. They want everything they can to keep unemployment around 3.5%, to keep the market stable. And, you know, trade wars do not help this, right? Putting tariffs on things do not help the globalists. All the things that Trump did as a sort of nationalist and trying to pull back and create, you know, these weird debt swaps and all this weird shit that his administration was doing did not help the capitalists. It basically caused instability and caused them hardship. And yeah, they did choose Biden because Biden's going to get everybody back to work and Biden's going to do this and that. And when you have record COVID numbers increasing, you're not going to have record sales on any consumer goods. So you want to stabilize this as fast as you can so that every manufacturer can get back to where they were. The end. There is no financial capital versus industrial capital. It's all bullshit.
They're all on the same team. You took one capitalist party and you made two capitalist parties, which leads us to our next segment of this concept of a party realignment, which is, for some reason, people believe that the GOP, the Republican Party, is now the party of the working class, and the Democratic Party is now the party of the project management class and the educational class.
Ooh, I like that phrase, the project management class. Yes. You know, we're talking about, you know, the shit-lib managers, right, who think that there's some sort of, like, I don't know, hero to the working class. Oh, I'll let you a few things here or there. That's all bullshit. It's all naive and insane. There is no party realignment. It's just perception. Right now, right? The working class doesn't have a working class hero. And so they are falling for basically bullshit populist ideas that are flowing from the mouths of the GOP. They have no intention of helping the worker. And if they do, it's all short term to break the unions. It's all short term to basically break the Democratic Party. There is nothing there for the worker within the Republican Party. Fuck, there's nothing for the worker within the Democratic Party, except the Democrats are just slowly chipping away at your benefits. They're not trying to just smash them like the GOP is. I mean, there's nothing, there is no realignment. There can't be. It doesn't make any sense. It's just confused workers or hate-filled suburbanites or people who just aren't voting. I mean, yeah, we might have record turnout, but there's still a record number of people who aren't voting.
Right. It's a large segment of the population that does not care enough to participate. And yeah, turnout was really high this cycle. Most of that's because voting was as easy as it's ever been, but still you had at least 30% of the population was like, I don't care.
Or they couldn't vote, right? right? I mean, it was easy, it could be, but it's also, you know, a hardship for like indigenous people or rural Americans. They may vote red, but at least, you know, they still have to drive 95 miles to the first polling booth or one of their polling booths, right? You know, the elderly that have to still do mail-in, it's still troubling. People that went to the hospital for COVID can't vote, right? I mean, if you're sick in bed, are you care about getting absentee ballot? No, right? If you're working two shifts plus, or, you know, two shift days plus you're driving Uber Eats around for fucking booty assholes in the city, are you caring about me? You're not. You know, this idea that this is realignment and that, you know, you kind of saw the hint of this sort of, I guess, boogeyman in 2016 when, you know, you had all the red flags coming up saying, you know, Trump's going to win the Rust Belt. And a lot of that has to do with endangered white voters. When I say endangered, I mean their way of life is in danger because they've seen it stripped away. Their material conditions of the voter in the Rust Belt is that they've seen years of job loss and years of wage stagnation. So they blame it on things like immigration. They blame it on things like the Democrats giving away in welfare. They blame it on all types of these boogeymen. But at the end of the day, it's the policies of the capitalists that really hurt them. But they don't hear that messaging from the Democratic Party. They hear from the Democratic Party, we're getting making more jobs. But making more low-paid, shitty jobs is not going to help anybody.
Yeah, so people incur material conditions through politics, but they often don't have the wherewithal to vote based on policy that would improve their material conditions. Most people vote based on some premise of propaganda or culture wars or some kind of bizarrely held belief that isn't in any way, shape, or form tied to a policy outcome. The idea that a party realignment is happening would have to be premised on the parties actually standing for something. But they don't stand for anything. They're just sort of an incoherent vessel for propaganda. And when you look at why one party wins or why another party wins, it's not based on who has the better policy. It's based on who did a better job of propaganda to the masses to convince, you know, low information voters why the other guy wants to, you know, take their money or take their health care or take their job or take whatever. It's generally fear-based and it's propaganda and it's about manufacturing consent for the desires of the capitalist class. And both parties are doing this. They're both advocating for capital, but they're kind of purposely taking a different propaganda angle to target a different demographic to create this perception of a choice.
I like how you said perception of choice. It really is. It's just like when you go to the store and, you know, you have the choice between, you know, any food you want to buy, but really you have three brands you can choose from. It's the same thing with the you know, voting system. You have two major brands and you have off brands. I mean, we're talking about this idea that the people that have been chosen around the national level give a shit about the worker, the local issues. These people are just, you know, machine individuals who have chosen because they have the financial backing, individuals because they've been in the system for long enough to understand what's going on. They are not, you know, local boys and girls who, you know what the issues are. These are people that are career politicians or, you know, career lawyers or doctors who have, again, money to self-fund. And when we come back to this idea that this party realignment, again, it's all fake and it's designed, again, for propaganda. You already see the media is slashing out at the left saying, you know, it prevented Biden's sweep because the party was too liberal, which doesn't make any sense considering that the party has just been perpetual losers. The Democratic Party has lost the Senate for a long time. I mean, and they deserve to lose the House because they did nothing, right? Every bill they passed was a bullshit compromise bill. They should have called the bluff and just said, you're right, you're going to call me a leftist, I might as well vote left and pass some of the craziest ass bills with the House. But they didn't. They just passed basically Republican ideas in order to get things done, which means the workers got hurt in the long run. And this leads back into this manufacturer consent, where you see a bunch of think tanks and other entities popping up who just talk as if they're champions or they're really going to do something, they're going to fight for you. You know, one example is the Lincoln Project. You know, we talked about this before and maybe other podcasts that we talked about just this fake noise that's being made. You know, these grifts that happen where they just take your money and they run ads, but the ads don't do anything because if you're a Republican, are you really going to vote Democrat? No. At the end of the day, you're not going to because you understand power. And if you're that weird 1 or 2% voters who go back and forth, those ads aren't targeting you. You don't give a shit about them. You never see them. Like, who cares if an ad goes up in Times Square? They walk by that. It's just noise. No one gives a shit that Ivanka Trump's a scumbag. We know that they are. We know she is, right? We know that she stole money or made herself rich. That doesn't persuade a voter at all. Nobody cares about that. What they care about, yeah, their material conditions. The idea that there's some weird, you know, ideologies or some purity tests or whatever in politics is just fundamentally flawed. You know, they ran candidates with fake names in Florida.
Florida, yep. Three candidates ran in Florida in local Senate races that were funded by an unknown group. And it's unknown because Florida doesn't require disclosures of funding. They did a $2,000 self-funding donation to themselves. And then they basically did nothing. The most prominent race involved an incumbent Democrat whose last name was Rodriguez. And then you had a challenger Republican. And one of these fake candidates also had the last name of Rodriguez. And this fake candidate got roughly, I want to say 6,000 votes, something like 3% of the total outcome. But the race was decided by 100 votes. So effectively, the Republicans bought a state Senate seat for $2,000 just by creating voter confusion. This is a prime example of a coherent effort by the capital class, by the Republicans. Actually, we don't know who did it because it's all secret, but presumably it was the Republicans. But they're representing some capital interest because there's money involved, and nobody buys a Senate seat through the goodness of their heart. There's some profit motive, right?
It's not because they love you that's running for the Senate.
In Florida, you had a Senate seat that was previously held by the Dems flip based upon some unknown entity spending $2,000 to affect the race.
Best $2,000 we ever spent.
You bought a 3% flip for $2,000. And this is an exact example of how these opposition groups, they collect money from donors, and then they go off and do the bidding of these donors. And it like in this instance, it has nothing to do with a party realignment or anything. It's just one side, the Republican side, deciding they want to win, and the other side deciding they didn't really decide they didn't want to win, but they lost. It's like the Dems are unwilling to do what needs to be done to win, and the Republicans, in this example, were completely willing to do some completely legal but maybe perceived as shady stuff to win. And so this party realignment concept predicated on like workers choosing the GOP because there's a large-scale shift, like, no, the one side just had better propaganda.
Yeah, better propaganda, better donors, better planning, right? Better infrastructure, everything's better. That's why, you know, Trump won not because he was a better candidate. I mean, he kind of was relative to Hillary, candidate-wise, not person-wise. They're both pieces of shit, by the way. But this party wanted to win, and somebody had the knowledge of the system and went forth and got what they need to get done. And this is what's missing for the Democratic Party. They believe shit like, you know, if we're just nice to the voters and tell them how we really are, they're gonna want to vote for us. We'll send out mailers and emails and we'll just ask them to vote for us out of principle. Fuck that. Principle doesn't matter. That's ridiculous. You need to want to win. And the Republican Party has wanted to win every single election, and they keep trying to win every single election. But the Dems are like, you know, maybe we'll go recruit a doctor. They seem like it's a good doctor year, which makes no fucking sense to me. Anyways, I'm mad about this because the Democratic Party should be doing the same thing. If they really wanted to win, they would. The idea of principles in politics is sort of a perversion of what it is, and that's the propaganda that keeps the Democratic Party from winning. Now, at the same time, they deserve to lose because they're just shitlibs who love corporations, and they just kind of pretend to be for the worker.
The premise of there being a party realignment is kind of predicated on there being party alignments to begin with. And I think what we just discussed kind of leads to the conclusion that there really is no alignment other than propaganda. And one side kind of perpetually deciding that they want to win to a greater degree, and the other side kind of just being disinterested in winning. And the Dems don't stand for anything, and that's kind of a whole historical problem. But I don't think it's because you have a voting bloc aligned with them versus another voting bloc, and that's suddenly starting to change because of messaging. It's all propaganda, always has been. Astronaut meme.
Yeah, I hate this idea. I hate the idea that the Democratic Party actually stands something because they don't. You know, there was a time when I was a shit lib and believed it, and I would go to meetings, nothing got done. You have to rely on basically the third parties and the candidates themselves do anything. And if the candidacies make any sense, they do something. There's no party realignment. It's all bullshit. People are just trying to grasp at something because they don't like the outcome. They don't like the outcome that Biden was such a shitty candidate that he couldn't win, you know, 300,000 electoral votes again to one. You know, he had to, you know, barely scrape by, almost to the point of embarrassment. I mean, anybody could have won against Trump.
Except Hillary.
Except for Hillary. Even this year, Hillary might have won if she just did what Biden did, which was hide and not say anything and shut the fuck up and
not die.
Pretend that he doesn't have a stroke. Not die. Yeah.
Don't go into any poor people's houses in Iowa and look mortified.
Yeah. The most basic explanation for political outcomes is simple. Did Cap do what they wanted? Hell yeah, they did. Yeah, it's Occam's razor. The most basic explanation is that capital achieved what capital wanted to achieve. The system is working as designed. There's nothing magical here. And any effort that you use to explain outcomes, they better include capital achieving its objective or explain why it failed. Because right now, we've seen with these two examples that capital achieved what it wanted to, which was Biden's win.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.